Views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Yeah, welcome to Cooking Like a Pro with Chef Cal and Mrs. Chef Krista. We appreciate you tuning in here. It's 1460 AM and 96.5 FM. If you'd like to call in with a cooking question, it's 530-605-4567. Again, 605-4567. And if you'd like to just type in a question and send it to us, Cooking Like a Pro podcast.
.net.
Yep. Cooking Like a Pro podcast.net. So welcome, folks. Thank you for tuning in. We appreciate it. We always just love to have people listening. And if you'd like to call in again, we're actually going to start off talking about in our normal, lead in. And I guess we call it the A block, where we have our fresh update. And we're going to be talking a little bit about community gardens. And I was recently down in a community garden down in Sacramento with a friend of mine, and it was just amazing. It was amazing. I think he said he paid around 40, 50 bucks for the entire year, and they got this plot, and it was, I don't even know, maybe 10 feet by 10 feet, but there was a bunch of them, so people could grow stuff, and some people grow just to grow, so they would set stuff aside, and people could take it if they want.
Was it specific to their neighborhood?
I don't know. They're in the central Sacramento area. But anyway, I remember because that's where I got a spaghetti squash.
That's where all of our spaghetti squash has been coming from.
And, you know, spaghetti squash that we're going to talk a little bit about. So, again, if you have any questions, you want to call in. And if you know anything about a local community garden here, we'd love to hear from you as well and get some information on that. But it was, I just thought it was really interesting, you know, especially if you're a person and you don't have a lot of land, or in Redding, you don't have a lot of shade. Yeah. And,
well, it'd be nice to share the work with other people. You wouldn't be just you controlling everything and watering everything and getting rid of all the pests.
Pests. Yes. Yeah. There's a lot of, our garden, we grow, most everything we've moved to where it grows literally where it's in the shade.
Well, it has to be when we hit 119 around here.
Well, when you get a tomato and it's, the end starts burning before it's ripe, then you gotta start picking them before they're completely ripe and allowing them to ripe on their own, which is fine, as opposed to letting them be eaten or, having them become, burnt. But, the challenge is, you know, you want them to stay on the vine as long as, whatever you're growing, folks, it needs to, the longer it's on the vine, the better shape it's going to be when it comes to flavor.
Well, I planted our tomatoes late because I kind of skipped through that heat wave we had, like, you know, it's 117 or 19. So now I've just got them planted. So by the time they're ready to come into the fruiting season, it'll be cooling down. We'll be going into the September, October months and get some nice fruit at the end of the summer.
What was what are those yellow ones coming up? I noticed yesterday.
I know we
grow the sunburst. Is that
with their sun gold sunburst? These were a yellow pear.
Okay. They were a little bit elongated, I noticed. So yellow pear.
So those are our first ones to pop up.
Something about the taste of a fresh tomato. And the smell. But I know that mom and dad are, grow tomatoes and they've been having the same challenge with needing to pick them, a little bit early. And it's still going to be better than something that tastes like the cardboard box that comes from, you know, south of the border or from a long distance away.
Well, hopefully by the end of the year, we'll have some nice beefsteaks.
There you go. Beefsteaks. Yep. BLTs. That's what the B stands for. Beefsteak. But anyway, so the spaghetti squash is a wonderful vegetable. It's one that I've always enjoyed and one that I've used in all of my restaurants at one point or another when it's in season. And the thing is, it is a winter squash. It's a squash that falls in its season, starts in the winter. But their shelf life is
forever.
I don't know if I've seen one go bad. Now, we generally use them up before, you know, that.
Well, they have a hard shell, you know, unlike summer squash, which is very soft skin. Yeah. This has a very hard skin, hard shell.
They're protected.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's great. I'll tell you, when you think about spaghetti squash, folks, think about using it in the same way you do spaghetti, the pasta, or some people, like our son, calls it noodles. So, think of using it that way. It's literally in the name, spaghetti squash, and it works great for spaghetti. And it's not just if you're looking for, something that falls under the line of a vegetarian type of a diet. But the thing about spaghetti squash is just the carbs alone. I mean, one cup of spaghetti squash has 1/4 of the carbs as that 1 cup of pasta is going to have.
Well, and they're a better carb. They're going to be more higher fiber.
And the flavor. I mean, you know what kind of flavor pasta has? Pasta tastes like, it's like escargot. You know, it tastes like what you cook it in. You know, you eat escargot, it tastes like garlic and shallots and white wine and all this luscious butter. And well, it's the same thing. You take it apart and you're still eating a snail. You know, although a snail is going to, I guess, more flavor than flour would. But yes, pasta is just flour and water. You know, sometimes maybe there's some egg. But for the most part, what you get now, and plus it's all-purpose flour, so it's not the greatest for you. But I'll tell you, just treat it as you would spaghetti. And you can use it as an entree. You know, I know we have a spaghetti squash that we're going to have for, I think, tomorrow's dinner.
Mm-hmm.
And a couple different ways to cook that. Matter of fact, you don't even need to be taking notes. If you are taking notes, you don't need to take notes for the next 5 minutes or so, because my wife spent quite a bit of time, didn't you, sweetheart, on the in our website. So that's cookinglikeapro.com.
Well, actually, I would prefer that they would go to the main cooking website, which is culinaryyours.net.
Culinaryyours.net.
But you can get there from the podcast also.
Okay. So go ahead and tell us tell our listeners what it is that you spent all your time on today.
So instead of a traditional recipe, this is one thing that you're going to create. These are the steps. These are the ingredients. I'm trying to create something that's a little more of an overview type recipe, that these are all the possibilities that you could do with this ingredient. What type of sauces it could go with, what type of proteins, meat can it go with, what type of vegetables, what works best with the squash.
You know, and I think the processes of cooking it and preparing it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's easy. You cut it lengthwise. Go ahead and scoop those seeds out. Plant them if you want. They will grow. But then you can roast it. I know that a lot of times what we do is we would steam it, because steaming is better than boiling. Boiling is going to be taking out some of that flavor. Sometimes we microwave it, because it's microwaving its own juice. Usually if I'm going to microwave it, I'm going to put it in a bowl and cover that with plastic.
It also takes about 1/4 of the time.
Yeah, exactly. So you can microwave it in 8 to 10 minutes, where, you know, if you're going to boil it, it might take, you know, 3 times that. And then if you're going to roast it, it's going to take about 40 minutes, maybe even a little bit more than that. But cut it width-wise, so they're scoop the seeds out. Go ahead and do your butter and salt and pepper and set it facing up. And just let it roast, and you want it to roast until what there's a term we use in cooking, we call it a fork tender. So where it can be, you stick a fork in it and the fork comes out without yanking on it, without it being held at all. That's fork tender. So when it's fork tender, that means it's, you know, it's done, ready to go. And then you just use that same fork to kind of scrape it up, and now you have it actually comes with its own shell, its own bowl. It comes with its own eating vessel. It's like an oyster. It comes with its own bowl. Or turtle soup, right? Turtle soup comes with its own bowl.
I don't think so.
You don't think so?
No,
okay. Well, anyway, so a variety of ways you can do it. And the thing is, it's really high in fiber. You know, if you're looking for fiber in your diet, that's a great way to go. Vitamins A, C, and then some pigments also. What was that? Carotene? Is that
carotene,
what it's called?
Yeah.
Carotenes, yeah. Okay. You see them a lot in carrots.
Yes.
I'll have those in carrots, but you want to get them when they're ripe. You don't want any blemishes on the outside. And, really the shell should be pretty hard. So again, use them for a side. You can use them, make a ramen. and just use them in place of the noodles.
Well,
that's going to take your carbs down to one quarter, so that's 25%, 75% your savings. But treat yourself to some spaghetti squash, folks. And again, go to Culinarily Yours, and you can go ahead and print off several pages of ideas on how to prepare and how to serve and everything you need to do spaghetti squash. So
how to cook spaghetti squash.
There you go. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to Cooking Like a Pro with Chef Cal and Mrs. Chef Krista.
KCNR Shasta is also broadcasting at K243CT Reading.
Hey Reading, take an inflation vacation with Black Bear Diner's 7 new weekday dinner deals, starting at just $9.99. Tasty fish tacos, creamy fettuccine carbonara, steak and fries, a crispy chicken dinner, beef stroganoff, and more. Serve Monday through Friday after 4 p.m. Escape inflation's grip on your wallet and set the table tonight with good old-fashioned family food at your friendly Black Bear Diner in Reading on Hilltop Drive.
Black Bear Diner.
When people ask me for a recommendation for a heating or air conditioning company, I always say Alliance Heating and Air. Why? Well, they've been taking care of our HVAC system for 14 years. Professional, friendly, and willing to go to the extra step for their customers. I have found no problem too difficult or too minor for them to repair. I recommend Alliance Heating and Air with no reservations. You can reach them at 530-221-2642 or online at homecomfort.org. And they have 24/7 emergency assistance. Alliance Heating and Air.
Ready for an unforgettable night of amazing music and good vibes? Then join us for an epic night at Danger Kitty's Billion Dollar Bash 2. It's all going down August 24th at the Axiom Repertory Theater, and this lineup is straight fire. We're talking about the killer sounds of Jeremy Ryan and the California Grown Band and the Pine Dogs Unleashed as openers, with Danger Kitty as the main event. Plus, you'll be feasting on some mouthwatering grub from Lakata's Catering, and the Axiom No Host Bar will be open. The whole shebang is included in your ticket price, and it's powered by Kay Shasta, Soundwave Entertainment, and KCNR Radio. Don't miss out on what is guaranteed to be a legendary night of rock and roll. Grab your tickets, rally your crew, as this promises to be a night to remember. Head on over to our website, DangerKittyMusic.com, or the Axiom Theater website for all the details and tickets. We'll see you there.
Night. It's a beautiful night, and we call it a bella notte. Look at the skies, they have stars in their eyes on this lovely bella.
Welcome back. Cooking Like a Pro. We appreciate you listening. And again, if you have a question, you can always give us a call at 530-605-4567. Or if you're the kind of person that likes to type, which is not me, that's more my wife, but she's the typer, but Cooking Like a Pro podcast.net. So, but anyway, you've got Cooking Like a Pro here, and we are on to our next segment, and we're going to be talking about, like, we've been talking about cooking methods and skills and those kind of things in this second section that we have. So today I want to talk a little bit about roasting, because roasting is something that a lot of people do. Okay. I'm trying to be okay. A lot of people do, but then a number of people do wrong. Lee. And, so I want to talk a little bit about that. And, we won't talk about that first, fight that we had when, what was that? That was over 20 years ago about the pot roast.
So, the pot roast or Swiss steak, one of the two.
Yeah, it was something. But, you know, hey, you know, we hadn't gotten married yet. So it had to be over 20 years ago. And it was, you know, when you've got a couple of cooks, you know, a couple of passionate kitchen people when the conversation goes sideways on how to cook something. But, anyway, what we want to do is talk about roasting. Remember, roasting is going to be those, what we call secondary cuts of meat. They're going to be those cuts of meat that are going to be from the muscular parts of the animal. So again, like we've been talking about all along, you got to kind of picture that animal. If you go up to the butcher store, got all that meat in front of you, picture that animal. Where's it come from? You know, if you don't know, ask your meat monger. Remember, monger is just a term we use for an expert, but whoever is the meat guy in the back or the meat gal in the back, just ask them. Say, hey, where does this come from on the animal? And again, if it's from that front section where like your shoulder or your chuck roasts come from, or that back section where all of your sirloin and where your butt comes from, that's right, like pork butts or something, you want to, you know, you wouldn't take like a really nice center cut meat like a pork loin, like something you would cut like a pork chop out of, or maybe a pork medallion. And if you took that and used it as a, like for carne asada, you know, or carnitas, or rather, you would end up like a chili verde. You would end up with something really dry because the meat has no moisture. It's a meat that needs to have a dry cooking method, right? Saute it, you know, or char grill it, barbecue it. It's barbecue season.
So what meat do you roast? And so I'm not understanding, what is the difference between roasting and baking? They both go in the oven, right?
Excuse me. They both go in the oven.
Okay.
Well, or the crock pot.
Okay.
You know, but the thing about roasting is, and we'll just walk quickly through the process, is you want to take your meat. And here's one of the challenges that I see is people will, first thing they'll do is they'll say, oh, I want this rub, or I make this really nice rub, or I purchase it and I put this rub on there. Well, you look at your rub and look at those ingredients, because the number one ingredient is salt.
Salt.
Yep. Yeah, you're going to have a problem because salt dehydrates things, right? This is how they make jerky. This is how meat back in the days before refrigeration, this is how they sustained it for lasting on the long, you know, trail ride here.
Yeah. So if you're going to roast, don't salt it?
Go ahead and rub it with a dry rub. I wouldn't recommend a marinade. But what you want to do with the roast is you want to sear it. So you want to get that seasoning on there. Then you want a really hot surface. A cast iron pan works great. Any kind of a really heavy bottom pan. A little bit of oil. Go ahead and take that seasoned meat and then sear it on every side.
And then you're making like a crust, right?
Exactly. Exactly. It forms that barrier that helps the flavor actually stay into the meat.
So it locks the moisture inside.
Locks the moisture inside and then also the flavor.
Okay.
So we're going to sear that all the way around, and then we're going to roast that in the oven until it's nice and tender. Now, depending on where the meat comes from, it might be something a little higher on the sirloin, like kind of the back, you know, end of the animal, but up high. So it might be something you're going to do like for roast beef. Because, you know, if I want a roast beef sandwich, I don't want something that's completely well done. But generally when you're roasting meat, you can do it that way. Same thing with when you roast a turkey. You do the same thing when you roast a turkey. Right? So you just put it in, you know, season it, put it in the oven. You know, generally with the turkey, you want to pull the skin back and put the seasoning right on the meat. That's one of the things that a lot of people make mistakes on when they season poultry. If you season the top of the skin, and as soon as it starts to cook, that skin gets, you know, the fat in the skin starts melting off. Well, there goes your seasoning as well.
Well, I've seen a lot of people, or not haven't seen them, but I've seen online where they'll take the butter and pack it under the skin too with the seasoning.
Yeah, that's a great way to go. Great way to go. Cause you want that flavor to go in there. I mean, it's butter, you know, it took me a while to train. That came out wrong. It took me a while to convince my wife, or teach her rather, of the top three French ingredients, right? Okay, so do you remember what the top three French ingredients are?
I think it's butter, butter, and butter.
Yes, it is. Butter, butter, and butter. So, butter is better. You can't go wrong with butter. We'll have to see if we can find a butter song one of these
days. So if you're going to be roasting in the oven, which cut would you go with? First off, and then what internal temperature are you trying to get to?
Yeah, you want it to get to the point where the temperature itself is going to tenderize the meat. All right, so when it starts to tenderize, you want all of the connective tissue. So basically when we eat meat, we're eating the muscle of the animal, the muscle fiber. Right? The muscle fiber is connected together with what's called connective tissue. The connective tissue along with you know, gristle or a few other things. That's what's going to make it tough. That's what's going to make it chewy. So you want to, you want that to melt away. And the way to do that is just to get it up to well over, I'd say, you know, you're looking at 180. A crock pot, is it a simmer? So that's 200, right? Boiling is 210. So you're going to want it at a high temp. And you're going to want to go again, and we use this term in the last segment, which is fork tender. Take a large fork, what we would call a carving fork, and stick that fork in there. When that fork goes in and then comes out without any resistance, your meat is just beautiful. But remember, you're looking at meat that's going to be beautiful, flavorful, tender, but it isn't going to be medium rare or medium anymore because that's down in the, you know, 125 to 135 degree temperature. And that's where we're used doing our dry muscles. Again, our filet mignon, our ribeye steak, our New York steak, and then a lot of our top sirloin steaks.
So do you roast like a prime rib, a rump roast?
Yeah, just like a prime. Well, again, I think if you think about it as a turkey, you know, where you just roast a turkey, you basically just, you know, it kind of does itself. You know, you truss it, meaning you get it to a point where it's not going to move while it's cooking. Not that it's, you know, going to run away, but you don't want, as it starts to cook, you want it tied up in a sense where it's going to hold its form. You know, when you're carving a turkey, you want it to look like a turkey. You don't want one leg going left and one leg going up. And then it's seasoned, then it's just roasted until it's done all the way through.
And is it always a higher temperature? So I know when you made the prime rib before, you did a super low temperature for a really long time.
Yes. Now there's a variety of ways of doing it. I know that one of our restaurants, back in the late, I think it was 2007, 2008, 2009, somewhere in that area.
Yeah.
We did a prime rib, and it was just so well received. But that prime rib cooked a total of 18 hours.
Was it like 200 degrees or just a real low and slow?
No, we would cook it lower than that.
Oh, really?
I think we cooked it at 138 degrees, but we'd put some smoke in there, a really low oven. Actually, it's kind of a specialty oven that we call it. It's almost like a warmer or something. They call it an Alto Sham, but it's kind of a warmer. And it's just at a medium temperature. So anything you put in there, if it's set at 138, cannot get higher than 138. It's kind of the same idea sous vide, where they'll submerge something in water and the water's temperature is 100 and whatever, 35 degrees. Whatever you're submerging in there that's wrapped in a heavy plastic to protect it, that meat, that protein, whatever it is, cannot get higher than the temperature of the actual liquid. So that's kind of the same thing with the slow cooking. On the high cooking, they usually 7-8 minutes per pound. I always just check. You want a direct a temperature gauge. There's a direct response thermometer is what it's called. It's a long. We have those at home.
Absolutely,
yeah, they're about 6 inches
all the time.
Long with a little gauge at the end of it that ranges between 0 and 220. If your meat gets up to 220, you're in serious trouble. But the key to that is the tip, the point of that. Imagine it like a really thin pencil. Needs to be in the center of whatever you're checking the temperature on. And that's by far the best. That's the best way to do it because, you know, you see things that are getting close. You can even turn the oven down. I use timers. A lot of people use timers. I also tie a rag on the oven door. I do a lot of things to remind me. I'm getting older. We forget, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I can't remember.
So temperature gauges are good. Bells and whistles are good. Remember, I started cooking way before anybody even thought about cell phones. So we didn't have that, the advantage to that. But again, you want to sear them. You want to add your aromatics and your bouquet garni. Now now the mirepoix, something that was one of the first things I think that we went over.
Celery, onions, and carrots.
Yep. Two parts onion, one part celery, one part carrot. And then how about the bouquet garni?
Ooh, bay leaf, thyme, and
parsley.
Ooh, parsley, yeah.
Well, you got it.
Two out of three.
You got it. Well, and the reality is these ingredients, this mirepoix, this bouquet garni, and remember I was trained through a French apprenticeship, so that's why we use these terms. But the mirepoix and the bouquet garni are going to give whatever roast, whatever it is that you're cooking, it's going to give it what we call the aromatics. That's going to be that aroma that comes up. That's going to be that additional flavor. And that flavor is just going to penetrate all the way through. But it's those basic ingredients that you pretty much put in just about everything. And it's also real close to one pot cooking. So you can do it here, do it in a crock pot. I've got a lot of memories of my mom, dad putting something in the crock pot. We ate a lot of crock pot when I was younger.
So a crock pot, you can roast also. It's not strictly to an oven.
Yeah. Well, now you, with the Instapots, yes, you can get those hot. You can sear and then just finish it off. That's going to be even faster because it's cooking by pressure.
And but, you can sear it in the same vessel.
Yeah. So you put it in a crock pot and plus it makes the house smell better, right? All right. So crock pots here on Cooking Like a Pro. We'll be right back after these breaks.
I'm never satisfied. I want the frim sauce with the O's and they wish a fava on the side. I don't want pork chops and bacon. That won't awaken my appetite inside. I want the frim
Blue skies and sunny days are here, and so is summer travel. That's why Quick and Clean Car Wash at the corner of Market and Eureka Way in downtown Reading invites you to stop by and enjoy their all-cloth car wash, where they take the time to pre-wash and hand-scrub your car or truck, where they work hard to remove the bugs, just in case your vehicle is a summer bug magnet. Quick and Clean is fast, convenient, and has a towel-dry exit. Quick and Clean at the corner of Market and Eureka Way in downtown Reading.
Success starts with a single step. At Shasta College, we can help you take that next step forward towards a new career or transfer to a four-year university with your first 2 years done. We have 75 years of experience helping students just like you build their future and realize their dreams. So, what do you want for your future? Success starts at Shasta College. Enroll today. Fall semesters begin August 19th. Enroll at shastacollege.edu.
This is Ted Leidy with Northern Firearms Instruction. Obtaining a California concealed weapons license will allow the licensed individual to transport a listed handgun in their vehicle or on their person in public. For application instructions, training, and other information, contact NFI at 530-999-1822 or visit us online at usgunpro.com. This is Ted Leidy, and remember, it's our right and our responsibility.
Hi, it's Mark from Haven Humane Society. Are you looking to add to your family? We have puppies, kittens, small critters, and farm animals. Each year we have thousands of amazing animals looking for homes come into our lives, and we hope to have them join yours. Follow us on social media and find our links on our website, havenhumane.org. Watch our weekly content on YouTube, like our Mark's Monday mashup, when we talk about what's going on and introduce you to our team and adoptable animals. Get involved. Volunteer. Thank you for all your continued support. Together, we are moving closer to our ultimate goal of a North State with no more homeless pets.
And there you go, back. This is Chef Cal, my beautiful wife, Mrs. Chef Krista. We are, you're listening to Cooking Like a Pro right here at KCNR. We appreciate you tuning in every Wednesday at 5 o'clock. And yep, hey, good looking, what you got cooking? So we're going to be talking in this segment about cooking in the kitchen. And this was one of the things that kind of came out of nowhere with me, to be honest, with, when my wife, maybe it was 6-7 years ago, Chris, remember you'd asked me to show you some professional cooking things.
Like, it was like a New Year's resolution, yeah.
Cooking like a pro things. And so we went through this process, and there's one thing that you cannot do without when you're cooking in the kitchen with somebody. And I've known this because of my professional life, but we found it out at home, and that was communication. You got to be able to talk. If you're not talking, something bad's going to happen. Someone's going to get stabbed, or something's going to get dropped.
Somebody's feelings are going to get hurt.
Something's going to get burnt. Yeah, exactly. So
somebody's sleeping on the couch.
Oh, okay. There you go. All right. She said it. But what I enjoyed so much is that the communication component of this really had an added benefit just to our relationship of cooking together. It's kind of like when we talk about families, you know, when families used to all eat together. When I was a kid, we ate together. If you didn't, you know, I remember Dad. I mean, if you weren't at the table when dinner started, you didn't eat, you know, and you ate what was on your plate. And Dad and Mom were pretty serious.
More structured lives, it seems. Now it's things like everybody's going in different directions all at the same time.
Yeah. You know, and that's a great point. And I'll tell you, it's sad. It's sad because cooking, especially cooking together and eating together, it should be unifying. You know, it should be something that we do and we have fun and there's communication and we talk about this and we talk about that and we get the updates of what's going on and there's just this great opportunity that unfortunately in this day and time, with, you know, cell phones and laptops and computers and everything under the sun, that it pulls away from that and it pulls away from the family structure. And I'll tell you, I will tell you that honestly that I've said this for a number of decades now, that this has been one of the biggest challenges to just the assault on families, you know, in our country. Remember we talked about that in the past, that in America, we eat to live. We eat so we can have more energy. You know, we eat so we can have fuel to do what's next in our task. So we eat to live, where in Europe, it's the opposite.
They live to eat.
Yeah, they live to eat. They do their work, their job, whatever. But the eating is the benefit of that. It's the blessing in the day of getting everyone together and just and having a wonderful time.
Well, when I was growing up, there wasn't any one person in the kitchen. We had the entire family cooking. So my dad was a timber faller. He would be out, you know, finishing up his work day, you know, sharpening his chains. Uh-huh. Grandma was on salad. I was always on bread, whether it be muffins, biscuits, garlic bread, and sides. My mom was usually on whatever the main dish was. And if it was a grilling night, Dad was out on the grill. So literally every single person contributed to every single dinner, every single night.
You make it sound like a band. Like you're a band. You know, grandma's on salad. You know,
it was just like a stations in a restaurant. You've got your hot station, you got your cold station, you got your dessert station. You had your specialty, and we focused on our specialties to bring a meal together. It wasn't just one person trying to get it all done at the same time.
You know, and the sadness of that is that you don't see that very often.
No, not anymore.
You know, I mean, it's just one of those things that unfortunately we've evolved out of. But the one thing, and I'm not, you know, that I've seen through my years is that things come back around. You know, I will be very happy when that comes back around, where people see the value in cooking together. I mean, it's fun. It's exciting. There's all kinds of things you can do. But that communication is top of the line when you're cooking in the kitchen together. Another, you know, one thing I see also is cleaning as you go.
That's a huge help.
You know, so you don't end up with this big old mess. You know, clean as you go. Have the dishwasher empty. You know, maybe you can even have a little bit of soapy water in one of your sinks if you're not using it. But clean as you go so you don't have this. Because one of the things that makes cooking together difficult is knowing you got a big mess to clean up. Right?
Well, you have no room to do anything. Yeah. You can't move. Well, you can't put anything down. You can't find anything. You're confused.
So that's and then just a variety of things that I'd jotted down. Spreading out the work, like you had mentioned, having different people responsible for different things, like you, Dad's generally on the grill and these other things that are happening. But it makes it fun. It also gives you extra time to experiment. And that's something that we talk about a lot. You know, something, you know, you can try different things. Like we're doing a spaghetti squash. Well, maybe we want to do it a different way. Maybe we want to roast it off with some chopped up rosemary on top or something else that might just take it a different direction. Because another thing I see is people kind of get their four or five things that they cook, and then that's all they cook. You know, it's like, well, okay, I can do, you know, roasted chicken from, you know, Costco. I can do, a meatloaf. I can, you know, just do certain things that they do, this a certain rice dish, a pasta dish, and that's kind of everything kind of goes around that menu. Now, remember, a menu can be as big or small as you want it. But the exciting part of this is when you're able to experiment with new items and new products.
You know? I just had an idea. What if we took that yes, I'm getting tongue-tied here, the spaghetti squash, and made it piccata style with capers and lemon, like a chicken piccata? Do you think something like that would work?
Yeah, I think, especially if you're doing like a pasta dish, I think that it would work. If you remember, if you're using capers, the caper is the berry of a caper bush. And they put them in a brine, and that brine is really just vinegar and a bunch of salt. So if you're using capers, like a chicken piccata, or trying something like you talked about, like spaghetti, or the spaghetti squash in kind of a piccata sauce, then just be careful with the sodium. But there's a lot of things you can do to make it better. You know, having an extra set of eyes is always great in the kitchen. I do that, quite a bit, especially when I was doing like ice carving or something. I do the majority of it, and I put it back in the freezer and then bring it out later because I wanted to get that fresh look. And you need that. So that second pair of eyes, is never going to not help you.
Well, and another thing, smells. So if you're not in the kitchen, you constantly smell it. You kind of become kind of nose blind. Well, I'm out in the other room and I come in and go, something's burning. Something's cooked, something's done, something's ready to be pulled because I can smell it as soon as I walk in.
Yeah. Sulfuric vegetables are that way, especially broccoli. I can walk in the door and I can tell if your broccoli is done cooking or not. I can tell you if it's overcooked. I can tell you if it's undercooked.
Well, in most foods, they start to smell. That means they're almost done.
Yeah.
They don't really have much of a aroma until they're cooked.
So those are some of the things. Advanced prep. Another thing, prep things ahead of time. I know that we're putting our finishing touches on a meal planning seminar that we're going to do, so we'll continue to remind you as that gets closer. That'll be on your Culinarily Yours website. There's a lot of information on there. I want to talk about when it comes to advanced prepping, having a grocery list is a big thing. And maybe you can talk a little bit about this this grocery list that you made, because this is free, right?
This is free. It is available.
Anyone can get it.
CulinaryYours.net. Yes, it is free. But this is the exact one that we use. How do you keep track of your groceries? How do you remember what you're out of? The second that we are almost out of something, we write it down, and it's in a central location hanging on the fridge. My son can write on it. I can write on it. Cal can write on it. Anybody can add to the grocery list. So when I go sit down and plan my run to either Walmart or Winco or Target, wherever I'm going to be picking up groceries that day, I can look at the list and see what everybody is requesting. So it's a great way to keep track of things.
Yeah, I love the list, especially there's this little area that I write In-N-Out Burger. You know, because then you don't need the list, right? Because you've got your meat, you got your bun. You know, burgers are pretty much well-rounded, I think, when it comes to the dietary needs, the nutritional, you know, needs that people have. Right?
But what about Chick-fil-A? What if you want to have a chicken night?
Chick-fil-A, too. We got to give them all a chance. So, but having that grocery list, and again, you can go to Culinarily Yours, and get that and just print it off, make a couple copies, stick one on there with a magnet. And again, you know, I guess it saves sticky pads or post-it notes, right? You know, those everywhere, like, oh, we need this. Oh, we're out of chips or we're out of,
this is organized.
We need more vegetables.
Yeah, this is organized to where you can have all of your meat together, all of your dairy together, all of your vegetables together. So you're not running around between different aisles. If you're on that aisle, that's what you're looking for, is those items that you've written down.
You know, and that's what I like about this list, that you set it up kind of in the way most stores are kind of lined out the same. You go in that front door and boom, the first thing you do is go left and you hit the produce. And then you just move yourself around and then your frozen is towards the end. Your dairy is always
in the back.
Yeah, you got to walk for the milk, folks. You got to walk for the milk.
Always.
Yeah. But anyway, and if it's possible, shop together. You know, I mean, this is the life that we have. Spend it with the ones that you love. Whether you're cooking in the kitchen, whether you're going shopping together, create those memories. You know, those memories. Because first off, you never know what's going to become a memory.
Well, the things that I forget, if Isaac's with me, he'll go, hey, I like this idea as he's walking by. Well, then we'll make that for dinner.
Yeah, especially if he wants to cook it. So, and then also some of the other things as far as along the weekly meal prep is consider secondary use of items. Here's a perfect example. Let's say on Sunday, let's say we're a family and we're going to have a nice baked ham. Okay. And then maybe on cool it down, go through all those processes. Well, we can talk about that in a different show and how to do it. Extremely important to cool your items down. And then maybe after that on Tuesday, you have some nice ham sandwiches.
Mm-hmm.
And then towards the weekend, you dice up what's left and you got a beautiful split pea soup. So you've taken one item and you've got a total utilization.
Or a Denver omelet.
Denver omelets for breakfast. There's so many things you can do with ham. You know, it's not as versatile as bacon. Well, maybe it is more versatile. And they do come from the same animal, so that's always a good thing as well. So, all right. So, we appreciate you listening to KNCR, Cooking Like a Pro. We'll be right back for our last segment. Thank you much.
Just real quick, I want to say, I just looked at that website, and that's an amazing website, culinaryyours.net.
Culinaryyours.net.
Spoken by the man behind the window.
Yep, there's our chief engineer. All right, I'm going to call him Bo Snerdly. All right. Thank you, folks.
When the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie, that's amore. When the world seems to shine like you've had too much wine, that's amore. Bells will ring, ting-a-ling-a-ling, ting-a-ling-a-ling, and you'll sing the...
30 years ago, Simpson University arrived in Redding with a promise to serve the North State. Warmly welcomed by this far Northern California community, we forged lasting partnerships, serving our neighbors locally as well as globally. Building on our promise, Simpson University now offers over 20 degree programs. Our promise to be the gateway to world service begins in our backyard. Learn more about Redding's hometown university at simpsonu.edu.
Have you ever wanted to unlock your musical potential? Cascade Curations not only has great music, art, and fashion, we also offer fun and exciting music lessons for all ages and skill levels. Whether you dream of playing the piano, guitar, drums, or vocals, our instructors will guide you every step of the way. With flexible scheduling and personalized instruction, you'll be playing your own tunes in no time. Don't just listen to music, create it. Call or text us at 530-255-4855 to book your first lesson. Cascade Curations, where we believe anyone can learn to play their own song.
At Stifel Nicolaus, I am committed to offering investors personalized investment guidance. Stifel is a full-service organization with departments staffed with professionals that specialize in a wide range of investment opportunities. We strive to give each account, regardless of size, careful individual attention. This is financial advisor Susan Eastman at 530-244-7199. Let's talk today about a personalized plan. Again, that number, 530-244-7199.
Hi everybody, RC with Tobacco and Brew, and this month's Cigar of the Humidor, El Pulpo by AJ Fernandez. Receiving a 94 rating, El Pulpo is outstanding, balanced, layered, bold, are just a few words used to describe the powerful character of such a cigar from the factory of AJ Fernandez. Get yours today at Tobacco and Brew, Redding, California.
Welcome back again, Cooking Like a Pro. And this last segment, it seemed to be kind of evolved into the segment that we talk about wine.
Not white wine today. It's red wine today.
Red wine, you know. Dave, who sings that song? Is that Bob Marley or someone like that?
UB40.
Never heard of him.
The letter U, the letter B, and then 40.
Well, there you go. If you
want, but we all know the song.
We know the song. We know the song. So, yeah, so red wine, again, remember that when it comes to wine, that the term we use for the type of wine is varietal. Varietal is the name of the grape. And whatever is mostly in that bottle is generally going to use that, that term that we call varietal, as in whether it's a Cabernet or Sauvignon or a Chardonnay or Viognier we talked about last week. My dear friend gave me a bottle of Syrah and Barbera.
Oh, it was so good.
It was so delicious. Thanks, John. Got to give a shout out to John. That was I finally drank it. My birthday's been
Has
a
he
while.
He got any more?
I'm surprised it lasted as long as it did. But I was, you know, I guess I'm patient, getting patient when I get older, which is strange. But anyway, Cabernet, just such a wonderful wine. But again, it the thing, you have this varietal, it also depends on where it grows. You know, the growing region, where it comes from. Does it come from a place down like, you know, Napa, or that Sonoma area where you got these cool long summer evenings so those grapes can develop? Because you need those grapes, those varietals, to do what they do, you know, to become more complex or not. If the opposite, then you're going to get a wine that certainly has less characters in it. But on a Cabernet, it is one of those things that it probably the wine that I think you can get the most out of when it comes to just this massive variety of flavors and aromas from the legs and what we call the body or the viscosity. You know, the legs, right? Why don't you explain what the legs are?
All right. Basically,
legs, wait a minute. My wine has legs? Is it going to walk away?
Okay, so legs. So you pour the wine into the glass and you kind of swirl it around. And then as the wine settles, whatever wine has gone up to the top of the glass starts to kind of stream down inside of the glass. And that's the legs.
Yeah, that's going to, again, we use the term sometimes viscosity. It's going to be a little bit thicker, and you're going to see that in these wines that are made well. Yeah, so it's one of the things you look at, and then also the aroma. You know, you don't just pop open a bottle and just, you know, start drinking it. Give it some time. First off, you might want to give it some time to breathe, you know, which I did with the wine that John had given me, you know, because it's been cramped up in this bottle. That was a 2019. So it's been cramped up in this bottle for 5 years, developing, breathing. Remember, that's why we use the cork, so the wines can continue to breathe. They continue to evolve in the different flavor characteristics that the grape has.
Will a synthetic cork be different than a regular cork?
You know, you see a lot more of those now. Mm-hmm. And yes, I think you're always better going with the regular cork, but for a while there was
a cork shortage.
So they started going to some of the synthetic things, and then even a twist off, you know, something that I wouldn't get a wine. I wouldn't expect a wine that had a twist off to be a wine that's made to last very long, because maybe for earlier consumption, something you want, a nice light fruity wine for, you know, lunch or dinner this weekend or something. And then, you know, something like that. Because basically, it's not what we call laid. It's not really being prepared to lay down and to take time developing the bottle. It's made to drink quicker.
So if I was to get one right now, what vintage year would I try and go for? Something that's a little bit older? Is it a younger wine, an older wine?
If you really wanted to research and you wanted a good wine, I would go straight to, you go to the Internet now. And go to the Internet and find out the best growing seasons. Because it's determinant on the season itself. Other things too, you know, the soil and the rain and a lot of things. But that's one of the things I'd look at. What are the best growing seasons? Because I know that, 78, 79 were great years. 84, 85, and 86, amazing years. 93. But I kind of quit, you know, I haven't had restaurants where I've been writing wine lists for a while. So I haven't really kept up on it, but it's certainly information you could get. And again, the best growing season is going to produce the best grapes, which is going to produce the best product.
Now, can you forget a cab and leave it in the back of the cabinet for a while, for a few years, and pull it out? Or is it something
you can drink pretty quickly? Yeah, well, you notice that the red wines they come in a bottle that's shaded. Usually it's a green bottle. And the reason for that is oxidation. Air getting to the wine is probably the biggest enemy of wine. It will oxidize. It will oxidize quickly. So you want to make sure that you keep it protected. The second thing, though, is also the light. You want to keep it in a dark place. If you have a cellar underneath your house, or someplace where you can put it where the temperature kind of stays the same, you don't want a lot of temperature change. You should be somewhere around the 60, 65 area. So it can go 70, but generally around 60, 65, because that's the serving temperature. And in France, that's cave temperature. So the wine is in there and it's dark and the temperature doesn't vary much. So those are the two things that are going to help your wine be able to mature in the way that you want.
And do the tannins help it have an extended shelf life?
Yeah, the tannins come from the seeds and the skin, and that's that. I like to describe it kind of as an aspirin kind of a taste.
That kind of chalky pulls on your teeth a little bit.
And that's in the wine to help it with its longevity. So if you want a wine that you're going to store for a while or lay it down, then you're going to want to have tannins in there, and that's going to keep the wine maturing. And once that tannin is gone, now that you don't taste the tannin, you taste the fruit. And that when you get to that point, that's when that wine is perfect. And a lot of things we look at, especially because it's a cooking show, is we look at food pairings, food and wine pairings. And chocolate is just an amazing thing. I don't know if a lot of people know that. But chocolate in a really good wine is just you're in heaven.
So if you did a tasting and just fruit, cheese, nuts, if you're doing just a cab night, what would you put with it?
Well, I'd stay away from cheese because the thing about dairy is dairy coats your tongue. So you'd want something acidic, like we talk about the Viognier or Sauvignon Blanc, something like that, maybe even a Chardonnay without the butter in it that hasn't seen any oak. So because you'd want to keep that your tongue being cleansed. But I think, you know, chocolate is a great one. Beef, umami, lamb. And then another thing is you can always use that wine product in your dish. Let's say we're making a stew and we're going to go with this particular red wine, then maybe that wine would be something that we would either deglaze or put in the food dish, so that would help it be a marriage. You know, it would marry it together because you're always looking for similar flavors or contrasts, opposite flavors.
Maybe some dried cherries or some dried blueberries also.
You know, if you're tasting the wine and you're getting those flavors out of it, then that's exactly what you want to do to pair it. If you're getting like cherries or currants out of something, then use those in the preparation of the dish. And you're going to have, again, instead of just enjoying the food and enjoying the wine, now you're enjoying the food and wine together. And if you're going to do that, then, you know, why not? I mean, why not enjoy as much as you can? Again, I'm Italian. We come from a family of wine drinkers, you know, so it was something that was kind of cultural, I suppose, for us. But it was something that always kind of, you know, enhanced the dinner. And as I got older and, you know, developed restaurants and had to write wine lists, I learned more and more about that. But matching the food and wine is something that's really good. And, you know, now that they have the internet, go to the webpage. You know, the back of the bottle will generally have very helpful information. Sometimes they don't put a lot of information on there. So go to the website. You know, every winery out there is going to have, you know, I don't know how many Cabernets are even made in California.
Well, interesting. I think Google was listening to us. You started talking about Cabernets, and Google popped up this article from Forbes today saying that there's almost 3,000 wineries in California, and over 1,000 of them pushed to make Cabernet.
Over 1,000?
In California alone. That's a third of the wineries.
I'm not sure if the fact that there's 1,000 wineries making cab bothers me more, or the fact that Google was listening to us. But either way, that's kind of, you know, the way it is this day and age. But again, go to the webpage, read the back of the bottle, and that will usually give you not just the flavors that you might expect, and just keep practicing. You'll get better.
Well, what,
you know,
another question for you.
Uh-huh.
So compared to, we've talked about Pinot Noir, and we have talked about Merlot.
Uh-huh.
How does it compare to those? Because they're a pretty gentle, accessible wine. Is this a little stronger?
They're going to be a little more complex. Yeah. Well, I would use the word they're going to be more complex. You know, they're going to offer more generally as a varietal itself. It's going to offer more. And then you can even go further on to that, like a Barbera or a Zinfandel, a red Zinfandel. Or they're going to have going to be very more complexities, more different flavors you're going to, you know, be able to pick up in them. But a cab is, especially if you're getting a cab from Napa Valley, you can't go wrong. It's an area where the growing season is very advantageous to producing real, real high quality items.
Would you lean to a bottle of wine that is a cab, strictly cab, or one that's a blend?
Well, it, it would depend. I mean, a blend is going to generally be inexpensive because that might be less expensive. That's why, you know, it's being using grapes from other areas. But I would go with one that's just Napa Valley Cabernet Sauvignon and something that maybe has the 4 or 5 years on it. I've drank them as much as well over 20 years old, and they are fantastic. So just, you know, have fun out there, folks, whether you're getting together in the kitchen with the family and having some dinner, and whether there's wine on the table or spaghetti squash or you're roasting something or you're cooking in the crock pot. Just enjoy yourself. This is Chef Cal and Mrs. Chef Krista, the Mercurial here on Cooking Like a Pro, cookinglikeapropodcast.net if you want to send a question for next week. We appreciate you tuning in here at
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.